Hello, and welcome to the next episode of TransPerfect Life Science Talks. I'm your host, Mark Wade. I'm the practice leader here at TransPerfect Life Sciences. Today, I'm joined by RZ Kadzora. He's the Chief Operating Officer and co-founder of Astenda Solutions. Astenda is an AI software organization that lives in digital health. And actually, RZ, before I even butcher it more, why don't you introduce your organization? Because you'll do it better than me.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. I appreciate the opportunity to chat today. Astenda is a company I co-founded way back in 2003, and we do focus on digital health software development, data, and AI more so now than everybody. It's just what everybody wants to talk about and focus on these days is the idea of AI. When I say digital health, that encompasses a large volume of potential projects and potential opportunities. We really tend to focus on the R&D and the clinical trial side of things. Helping companies develop experimental solutions, really trying to push the boundaries to improve patient outcomes, health and wellness. If we can develop a solution so that people can live longer, healthier lives, we're much happier.
I'm glad that you said that because to me, digital health, or DH, is just this enormous animal, this enormous behemoth. And we talk about the entire patient journey. So everything from home health and the technology we give them at home health and the technology we give them in clinical trials and the technology we give them in sites. It is a massive thing. And you saying that you speak to all of that life cycle and you are looking for innovative solutions?
Yes, we really focus on that patient side of things in that journey of helping them improve. So it might be a clinician focused, something that a clinician is using to better understand data or the situation, something a patient is using to improve their own health and wellness, or even when we work with medical device companies so they can better understand how their device is being used out in the real world to improve that patient experience.
That's interesting because in my world, I see AI as an overhyped, overworked phrase. And I think it's really proven. We've proven its worth in imaging. There's no doubt about that. In COA, where I live, AI is still a gray area because AI is so data hungry. And by the nature of the beast, COA is not data hungry. So do you see that as an opportunity for AI in COA, or do you see it as it's more of a clinical trial, larger enterprise?
I think there's tremendous opportunity for what we can use AI for. There are areas we haven't even thought about yet and how we can apply it into better understanding a patient's situation, either during an actual clinical trial or just out there in the real world, because it enables new paradigms that we as humans can't get at. When you do start talking about large volumes of data, we can't process it and understand it intuitively as an AI can. You just drop a large data set and you start looking at it, you see a bunch of numbers. What's the first thing you have to do? Well, you need to graph it and chart it to start understanding that. But if you ask the AI to start teasing out these ideas and find sub phenotypes in the data, there's a lot of opportunity there just examining the data, let alone looking at different paradigms, which we haven't really thought of just yet. Think of in medical fields, one of the biggest use cases now in the hospital, the clinical encounter is ambient listening, listening to the encounter to take notes. Well, what if you take that technology and then listen to the emotion of the user to better understand where they are in their journey?
Do you feel that AI can actually parse the emotional piece out?
Yes. Yeah, there are various solutions that are out there that are doing these today in very experimental early methodologies of trying to do that. But imagine in a clinical trial where you're going through how the trial is going to work and the informed consent. Is that person really understanding it or not? You know, can the AI start detecting notes of hesitation in the voice annotation of that individual that you're working with? You might not pick it up, but the AI has a pretty good shot at doing stuff like that.
This is fascinating because, you know, I know I'm bringing it back to my world, but in my world, we do a lot of cognitive briefing where we're interviewing patients on how they perceive a particular instrument. And I've always been an advocate for the face-to-face cognitive briefing because the clinician will be very sensitive to the body language, the nuances, the timbre, the tone of the person, the patient. This is kind of like out there. You're saying that AI can actually substitute that cognitive briefing interviewer and parse out those particular identifiers. I find that fascinating.
It's one of those use cases in its early stages of understanding the experience of humans, and not even in terms of clinical trials and medical encounters, but understanding where people are in the journey. It can pick up those little things. It can understand, you know, your heart rate. You know, we're not talking about ChatGPT, you know, that for general use cases. There's a lot of these AIs that are more specialized for these specific use cases. But as they do get more and more, what's called multimodal, can interact with different, instead of just text, when you, you know, ChatGPT, you're sitting there typing and interacting with it. Now it does have access to video. Like, it when I use it on my phone, it recognizes me. It recognizes my wife as panning around the room, and it can make differentiations in what it's doing.
Talk me through, because I hear all these things about not every AI engine is the same. Some are very different. Some, like you were talking about ChatGPT, quite functional. What you're talking about here is much more intuitive. So can you talk me around what are the different engines and why would that engine be so unique to your average engine?
What's fascinating is these models, large language models, they're leapfrogging each other as we go month to month and sometimes even week to week. Think of this last 2 weeks ago as we're recording this, ChatGPT and some of the Google models incorporated the ability to create images through that natural language processing, where there was a lot more specialized systems out there. There's DALL-E used. It was very focused on just creating images. That's what it was meant to do. Now ChatGPT has that capability built into it. So it's marrying together that intersection of that language processing and understanding what you're looking for with the ability to create an image. So it's fascinating. You can upload a picture of yourself. I've been playing this a lot myself. And it's just like, create an image of me surfing on a lava, you know, across the ocean. And there's a picture of me surfing across the lava on an ocean. Right. And it's fascinating what it can do. So it's marrying those two things together. What's going to be possible, you know, next week, next month in these different models? They're just continually leapfrogging each other. And it's interesting because once one of these vendors comes out with a particular approach, a particular solution, then all the other ones start copying and jumping on the bandwagon kind of thing and see who can get to
it. It just shows how nascent this whole technology is. And you actually bring up a good point there. So there's you surfing on a log, on a lava, if you like, right? One of my worries, I'm sure a lot of people in the audience can worry about these things, all these like deepfakes. Once we start, you know, imitating your voice, imitating your mannerisms, the AI learns you, and suddenly you are interviewing me naked, you know, doing something. You know what I mean? Like, there is no limit to it. That concerns me a little bit.
It is 100% a concern. I live in New Jersey, and they just passed legislation today outlawing the idea of deepfakes. It is a growing problem. You might remember the one a couple months ago back of the Pope wearing a large puffy white jacket. Everyone clearly knew this wasn't real, but it was definitely amusing. You're like, oh, wait a minute. And that technology, that ability is just getting better and better. For my job, I do a lot of interviewing of candidates. Am I interviewing a real person or not? Or even behind the scenes, are they using AI to be able to do better on that interview? But at the same time, it's an opportunity for me. How can I make our interview process better? So sort of bringing this back to the idea of the clinical trial, how do you create that digital avatar to be able to interview 1,000 people in a week? In my world, in terms of hiring people, I posted a job a couple of days ago and got like 3,000 resumes. I don't have the resources to interview 3,000 people. In a clinical trial, you want to interview 1,000 people, you know, you as an individual, or get 5 individuals, it's going to take a long time to process that through. But if you can create a digital avatar to now interview these people, then you're going to have a recording of that transcript, can use the AI to listen to the language of the patient and the interaction. It's a powerful potential to scale.
Yeah, all that being said, that's wonderful. However, I'm very cognizant of AI hallucinations. I'm very cognizant that it does introduce a bias, whether we like it or not. We saw that last year, didn't we? We saw that there was a bias introduced in a very large, I don't mention the name, but a very large data set that was published, and it was had a massive bias in it. My feeling is we are running a tiny bit too fast, and right now we do need a human in the mix. Your point is well taken that, you know, your AI engine could interview 1,000 candidates. But at some point, there's got to be a human in the mix. And my worry is that Johnny, who's a good candidate, your AI has a bias and says, no, Johnny's not suitable for the job. And Johnny actually is very qualified for the job and he's very, very good for it. So I think we can't be on autopilot. Right now, I just think that there's got to be some sort of guardrails and some sort of like human in the loop, definitely.
I agree with that. And we haven't made that leap to the AI first round interview just yet. We're still using humans for that. But that first round interview is verifying information that that candidate has submitted to us to make sure it's accurate, that they understand the job they're applying for. So it's very basic. Hallucinations, yes, it's a challenge, it's a problem. But there are known methodologies to implement to help alleviate those. And what I find fascinating in all of the AI research and everything that's doing out there is this continuing, we're raising the bar of what does it need to be able to do for us to find and to actually use it. Humans make mistakes all the time because we're human. We don't call them hallucinations. I don't even remember what that number was. So I made up a number or I fudged it or I generalized the number kind of thing. Humans do it all the time. But when we talk about these AI, like, well, that's not acceptable. There are clearly situations where, you know, you have to be absolutely certain in terms of medical treatments and things like that, where it's life or death and you can't have any hallucinations. And even with humans, you're going to have multiple checks and balances. But implement those same checks and balances with the AI. And I saw something the other day that it was an article and it wasn't peer reviewed at the point that I read it, but it was looking at AIs doing PhD level math competition problems. And the AI didn't score that well. What was interesting was the AI was getting the right solution, but wasn't presenting its proof in the way that the examiners wanted it. So it was scoring low. And that was a criticism of the AI. Well, how many people need the AI to do PhD level math competitions? I think you just need to start using it and playing with it today.
I've got to push back slightly here because you talked about like humans make mistakes, and we absolutely do. But the problem is that the average human mistake is not as huge as a machine mistake. Let me give you a real world example. An AI was asked recently about like how to clean or how to do a gut cleansing thing. These health things, gut cleanse, whatever. And the AI said, yes, use bleach, drink a pint of bleach and it will clean out your intestine kind of thing. Now, a human would never make that mistake.
It's odd that you pick bleach, and I won't name any politicians, but yes, there are clear examples where the AI goes off the rails, and you're like, well, eating rocks. You know, there was an example of just eating rocks. So, yeah, you eat 3 rocks a day. You do have to apply some of your own human intelligence, and it's getting better and better. Every day, these things are fading off into the background. And there are checks and balances to put in there. If you're using it for medical purposes, you are going to put those appropriate checks and balances in there. But in terms of a second opinion, in terms of understanding the challenges, again, sort of bringing back to clinical trials in your world, as you're developing protocols for a study, run it against the AI, and you can create personas in the AI. So you can tell the AI to act like the person that you are targeting in this particular study to see how it interacts and how it responds to your study protocol, to your kind of thing, to get really good feedback in those early stages.
I agree with you, by the way. And we had another person on the podcast who their company actually does AI protocol iterations. And that person talked about that. So thanks for the plug. There you go. I agree. I mean, it's definitely, I think one thing I will say, it's like anything. Do you remember, like, we're old enough to remember the Intel law. What was the founder of Intel? His law?
Moore's law.
Moore's law, that everything would double, kind of. And we're definitely, we're in that world where AI is leaping forward in capability, like exponentially. As you rightly said, they're leapfrogging each other. Someone comes out with a new capability, literally a day later, someone else comes out with something very similar, if not better, a better mousetrap. So I agree with you. It's exponential. I live in the clinical world. Right here, right now, I think we need a human in the mix. I think we're not there yet, but I totally take your point of view that we're getting there, and we're getting there faster than ever.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, so one, huge. I'm a huge proponent of AI. Yes, a human still has to be in the mix. It's an 80% solution. I think of it more as that really smart intern to the first year, you know, employee kind of thing. It might make mistakes and you have to give it really good instructions to get what you want out of it. And an example, if you remember Alton Brown, who did a lot of TV shows and the Food Network, I went to one of his presentations, variety show that he did, and he talked about AI. And he's like, I was skeptical. So I gave it a bunch of ingredients that were in my refrigerator and told it to make something. And then he made this on stage kind of thing, and it turned out to be disgusting. Like, well, you gave it a list of disgusting ingredients and just told it to create a recipe, and it did what you told it. You didn't tell it to create something that tasted good, in which case it might come back and say, these things don't go together. Yeah. Case in point, I did a presentation on using AI in software development and trying to gather requirements and figure out requirements. And I had this idea of, you know, creating an app to help people when the fear of peanut butter getting stuck to the roof of your mouth, something bizarre, unusual. It came back with one word, really? It floored me. It was, you know, it understood that I was like, okay, this is a little tongue in cheek. And, you know, do you really want to do this? And, you know,
snarky.
Yeah. And then I said, yes, this is what I want to do. And it created a whole bunch of requirements and user interface guidelines for doing just that. But yeah, its very first response was, really?
Well, just kind of interesting what you said, like programming in my world years and years and years and years ago, computers only do what you tell them to do. They don't do what you want them to do. So that cook, you know, that chef putting in those ingredients, you know, you gave him horrible ingredients, it's going to make a horrible, you're dead right. If it gave a good ingredients, I wonder what it would have come up with. You know, we could have gone through a database that, what do we normally do with chicken and tomato sauce and et cetera, yada, yada. It's very interesting that machines will only do what you tell them. They will not do what you want. AI potentially could bridge that gap and parse out what you actually want. And I think the really snarkiness, that snarkiness is kind of that next grade, isn't it?
Gosh, it's just fascinating to see those examples.
For me, anyway, I see the huge benefit in my real world is in how it can get huge bowls of data and cross-compare. Here's a great example. You look at compounds and you look at like contraindications and you look at compounds reacting with other compounds in a patient's body. There's a huge amount of data they need to go through, and AI can do that so readily. We see that before. I read a paper there last year around fibromyalgia and how it reacts with certain compounds. And in a literature search, no one found this. AI found this particular one paper. Yes, that it does react with these certain ACE inhibitors, and it does give us this reaction. One paper. It was fascinating. I think AI is great. I just did a lit review for a paper that I'm writing, and we use AI for that lit review. And it literally did it for us in 5 minutes, where it would have taken us how long? It literally did it for us in moments. And it came out with the right... I mean, so I see the value with using large data sets. I do see the huge value.
There's a huge efficiency component to what it's capable of doing. And your example of the drug interaction is one of those. I, as a human, cannot keep up with the literature, what's published out there. Yeah. Even if I could read everything, I'm not going to retain everything. And the computer and the technology has that capability. So marrying these things together to make our lives easier, it's here today. It's capable of doing that today.
What's the future? If I gave you a magic wand right now, what do you see the future of AI in digital health for patients?
I've been quoting Bill Gates a lot. And Bill Gates once said, as humans, we tend to overestimate what's possible in 2 years and underestimate in 10 years. I don't think we truly know what this is going to do in the future at the macro level. Like, this is game changing. I think of it as the printing press, electricity, you know, computers, smartphones, the internet. These things have been game changing technologies to society. They've all along the way came with their challenges. The new challenge of AI is it's happening much faster. So we're really struggling with adapting to it at the quick rate it's coming. But when the printing press came around and it became much easier to read books, people were fearful of reading books. And will we ever be able to remember anything anymore because there's books? Well, that hasn't happened. Calculators. Oh, we never have to teach math. Well, we still teach math. We've changed how we teach math. And so now the AI is going to change what we're doing. But it is, where is this going? I wish I had that crystal ball to be able to say. I don't think I really know where it is going. I'd love to think that it's going to make our lives easier. The other thing Bill Gates recently said a couple of weeks ago is we're looking at that 10-year time frame, a 2-day work week. You know, how can we make an actual difference in the world from that perspective of not having to work 5 days, 7 days, you know, a week? One of the interesting things about what AI is doing is it's taking that, and what it's really good at today is those creativity type of elements. These are the things I as a human want to do. I want it to go off and do the dishes, so I can go and, you know, play with the kids in the backyard kind of thing. So it's not quite there. But yeah, I think as we become more and more familiar with it, and as people start using and experimenting with it, and they're going through the school system now, we're going to realize all sorts of new potential, new ideas, new ways of exploring things that we could never think of before. One of those examples too, and like in terms of a clinical trial and understanding, you know, symptoms you don't think about. And I saw something where typing on a keyboard, if that skill degrades over time, I'm not going to recognize it. You looking at me aren't going to recognize it, but the computer can recognize it over time. Your ability to type in the same fashion is degrading, which could be an indicator of Parkinson's disease. So how can we use this technology to find those hidden signals to be able to intervene sooner and make more of a difference? Everything, I guess the biggest thing, AI is going to accelerate everything.
Everything,
and that's the challenge of it. Everything we do is going to be accelerated. And that's the biggest challenge, the biggest benefit, and potentially the biggest fallback.
Interesting. I just hope that it doesn't do what the naysayers say it's going to do and destroy the world kind of thing, but I don't know. Anyway, RJ, thank you so much for this. I really enjoyed this. Today, I was talking to RJ Kedzora from Ascenda Solutions. He's a co-founder and COO. I'm Mark Wade, Transperfect Life Sciences. Please join us for the next episode. If you want to be on the podcast, DM me or email mwade@transperfect.com. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Thanks, RJ.
Thank you.